Jeannie Flavelle's Hot Commodity Podcast Series. Empowering clients with commercial intelligence, supply chain expertise, and risk management solutions.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Mike Coughlin, President and CEO of McKinney Flavelle, and today is March 8th, 2024, and welcome to our Hot Commodity Podcast Series. Happy Friday to everyone out there, and it's a holy wasty day, but I'm not sure it's as exciting as it has been in the past. I'm joined today by Kevin Combs, Vice President of McKinney Flavelle. Hello, Kevin.
Hello, Michael. Hello, everybody.
And I'm also joined by Nicole Thomas, Vice President of McKinney Flavelle Information Sales and Service. Hello, Nicole.
Hey there, Michael. How are we doing?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. We're going to talk about the WASI today. But before we do, I got to do some promotion, Nicole.
Promotion, shameless promotion.
Let's do it.
Go.
We got our Spring Market Outlook webinar on March 27th. We're going to be covering corn, soybeans, sugar, and wheat.
Correct.
You can register through our website at McKinney-Flavelle.com. That's one thing, Nicole.
Yes.
What else should I promote?
I think there's something special happening in April that's like the greatest thing ever.
Why don't you promote it?
I think that there is a great group of people who are going to cover a bevy of subjects related to technology and how that's impacting our markets and sustainability and how that's impacting our markets. And it's the fine folks at McKinney Flavelle with their spring seminar in Oak Brook, Illinois, April 17th.
On April 17th.
There you go.
Well, and you know, I've been watching the people register for this. I get an email every single time somebody registers, and seats are limited. So we only have so much room in that facility there, in that room. So if you're interested or thinking about going, go ahead and go back to our website. But you're absolutely right, Nicole. It's all going to be about the movers and shakers. And I'll tell you what, I'm going to learn a lot in that. And anybody sitting in those meetings in their food company or if they're in ingredient sales, you're going to learn a lot about what's happening in those key ingredients.
Yes. I mean, who wouldn't want that?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Kevin, I think we should shift over to the WASDE. And Nicole, I apologize, but I'm going to start with Kevin because I think that for you, you're going to probably talk more about what you're doing this weekend rather than what was on the report. So let's start with Kevin. Kevin, what did they do with sugar? And you got to address what the USDA did this week with the TRQ. Please, please, please.
Well, first off, I guess, you know, I'm kind of feeling poor here because it sounds like Nicole has a lot more exciting weekend plans than I do that you don't want to hear what I'm doing this weekend.
I guess it depends what you're going to tell us on sugar.
Okay, well, I guarantee the sugar's more interesting than my weekend plan, so let's go there. Yeah, USDA obviously had some work to do, as we expected, on supply-demand, and sitting there looking out the windows in the Red River Valley, and people are telling us it's really warm, and thus the USDA kind of followed suit and did trim production. And, you know, beet pile shrinkage with warm weather is always a concern in the spring. And, you know, they've had some days getting up there to 60 degrees. And so they didn't disappoint. They lowered the beet production 155,000 tons. And that's, I said Red River Valley, but that's also some additional losses there in Michigan for the same reasons. So hopefully we get a little turnaround here and maybe these warm weather will turn around and result in some early plantings and maybe we can pick up some beet production on early harvest numbers when we get close to planting season. So we'll have to watch for that. But on cane, we actually saw an increase in production. So overall 47,000 tons, 50,000 tons higher in Florida, but a little bit of offset from Louisiana down 4,000 tons. So better cane production looking good. And then, of course, what we've all been watching for on the WASD numbers and talking about what's going to go on in imports. You know, the USDA gave us a little glimpse of, hey, we're going to be active. We're going to help out the supply-demand situation. So we're going to increase 125,000 metric ton quota to TRQ imports. But as we all knew, that was probably going to be offset. And Mexico, of course, was the big reason. And USDA lowered their sugar production estimate in Mexico down to 4.747 million metric tons this month, which I think is a start, but I think they got a long way to go, Mike, from what we've been hearing down there. Interestingly, Mexico did release their third crop estimate, and that's probably earlier than they normally do because of how bleak things have been looking. And looking at their estimate, they are using 61.56 tons per hectare yield on cane, 10.31% yield recovery, so sugar recovery rate, which is well down from where it was last year, but still quite a bit higher than what we're seeing this year. So in order to hit that type of number, Mexico's really going to have some sort of recovery at the end of this year where the sugar recovery rate is higher. I'm not sure that's possible. In fact, USDA in their commentary mentioned they were using 9.97%. So how they use the exact same estimates are obviously using some various different figures to get to those numbers. And then on their hectares harvested area, Mexico's using only 748,000 hectares, actually just a hair below that. If I punch that into our numbers, we're going to be well below 4.5 million metric ton crop. So I expect in the next couple months, obviously Mexico's crop usually finishes up late May. You know, they hope to get into June with a few mills, but certainly, by the time we get to the May WASDE estimate, you're going to have an exact, pretty much exact numbers. I think Mexico is going to be done earlier than normal, given the smaller crop, and expect to see, you know, a final number much, much lower. So as a result of that, you know, USDA came up with kind of an ominous number. I don't know. Did you see the number for U.S. imports of Mexican sugar, Mike?
You know, I didn't. What did they do?
Ominous number. It is 666. 666,000.
Wow.
I'm not sure that's the number that they like to do, but obviously they don't care about those types of things, I guess, and didn't round it up or down, you know, 1,000 tons. So, but again, I think when it comes down to the grand scheme of things, that number is going to be changed because Mexico's production number is going to be less, and therefore our imports are going to be much lower than that as well, I would guess. So, a lot of work still to do. I think the most encouraging thing is, you know, USDA kind of did decide that they needed to adjust imports prior to the April 1st deadline. So they're going to try to keep up with this. And they did spend two paragraphs talking about Mexico in their commentary on the WASDE report. So obviously they're going to stay very close to the situation, and we'll adjust accordingly. I'm sure we'll see a change in April, and we'll probably see more change in May, and hopefully address the situation and help make sure we have the sugar supply needed. But grand scheme of things, with the change, usually they try to get to 13.5% stocks to use ratio. I'm not sure it was a rounding error or what, but they left stocks to use ratio at 13.4% instead of 13.5. So signs of more to come.
Yes, I definitely. Okay, anything else on sugar, Kevin?
That's it.
Okay, great. Thank you. Nicole?
Yes?
What are you doing this weekend?
I will probably be sitting at a long kids baseball game, barring the weather being my friend and it being rainy, because that's, fingers crossed. You know, rain is good for grain. And
it is.
And keeping mothers out of bleachers. There you go. Games. So, okay. You know, fun times.
All right. Well, what did they do on the grains?
You know, the grains were pretty dry. No pun intended. I'm full of jokes today. Not much change, actually. Looking at the domestic balance sheet, corn stocks were left unchanged at 2.172 billion bushels. That keeps our stocks to use ratio at a good bearish 14.9%. And then globally, they did reduce ending stocks by 2.5 million tons to 319.6 around that area, resulting from a likewise kind of increase to export consumption. But interestingly, they left Brazilian production unchanged at 124 million tons. Everything we are hearing from everyone, including CONAB, the Brazilian equivalent to the USDA, is that crop is tad bit smaller, maybe off USDA's numbers by, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 million tons. You know, just a, what's a little tonnage between friends. But they did raise Argentinian production by 1 million tons to 56. And even though they lowered Ukrainian production by 1 million tons, they raised the exports by 1.5 million. And that kind of goes hand in hand with reports we're hearing of you know, surprisingly good movement of grain and oil seeds and oil products out of Ukraine as we're in, what, year two of this war. So overall for corn, today's report was pretty quiet. And maybe down the road, we'll see some adjustment to the export category or perhaps even the feed category once we get our next stocks report. But until then, pretty quiet on that front. And then for soy, you know, I guess the surprise for me with the domestic balance sheet was they didn't show an increase to ending stocks based off of weak exports. They left ending stocks unchanged at 315 million bushels and no adjustments to anything in the in any of the demand categories. You know, I think the interesting thing, again, for the exports, the current projections at 1.72 billion bushels, and we're running pretty well behind that number. A little, I would argue we're probably closer to 1.6, 1.65 maybe billion bushels for that category. But at least thus far, I guess they're not quite ready to make that adjustment. And we're nearing the end of what tends to be our peak period of export demand. And with, you know, pronounced weakness, economic weakness in China, more buying on their part from Brazil than the U.S., it doesn't look like we're going to see any strengthening of that category short of some unexpected late season demand. So I guess we'll see how the Brazilian crop fares when it's all said and done. Speaking of the Brazilian soybean crop, it, again, seems like USDA's willing to slow walk that reduction. They took it down by 1 million tons to 155. But again, CONAB and other private forecasters have that number maybe closer to 150, if not sub 150 million tons. And even though just 1 million ton reduction in production, they did raise Brazilian soy exports by 3 million tons to 103 million. Now, I don't disagree that we're seeing much in the way of exports from Brazil. Like I mentioned earlier, China has become a big buyer of beans out of Brazil. And so overall, though, looking at that global balance sheet, soybean ending stocks down by 2 million metric tons from last month's report. That puts us at a bit above 114 million tons. And it's still a year-over-year increase against 22-23. So overall, not too major. And the oil, soybean oil is concerned for the domestic balance sheet. They raised ending stocks minimally, I mean minimally, to 1.582 billion pounds. And that was due to a slight upward revision to beginning stocks, which are now pegged at 1.607 billion pounds. They did lower their price expectations, though, kind of match what's been happening in the futures market. And they took that down to 49 cents per pound. But overall stocks to use ratio sitting at 5.8%, still fairly bullish. Stocks, monthly stocks, be it via NOPA or USDA, continue to run behind last year by double digit percentage points. So in that regard, we're still, you know, a relatively tight market. And perhaps again, as I think I've mentioned before in prior podcasts, that these mid-40s is what we should expect with that sort of stock scenario and in lieu of much in the way of speculative investment in those futures. So we'll see how long that remains the case. And then from a global standpoint, global soybean oil stocks were lowered to just above 5 million tons. That puts it pretty close to parity with last year. But we're seeing stocks to use or still expecting a stocks to use improvement to 6.9% versus something closer, sub 6% for 22-23. Also worth noting, global vegetable oil stocks are now projected to fall year over year, sitting at 30.85 million metric tons And that's really based on an increase in usage. That is expected to increase by a little under 8 million tons in 23-24, or about 3.6% above last year's consumption level. So overall, I'd say the report was you know, a non-event. Kind of reiterates the current bearishness that we're experiencing in the market. But one thing I do want to point people towards and to really start paying attention as we kind of try to determine where the bottom is for a lot of these markets. The weather forecast is, to use Kevin's term earlier, increasingly ominous. not based on 666 or anything like that, but based on La Nina and a quick transition from El Nino to La Nina that should have us in that weather that climate pattern, I should say, by June, July timeframe. And when you combine that with some of the other weather cycles or climate cycles that are at play right now, it produces an outlook that is hot and dry for the summer in the Midwest. And if we, you know, it's kind of hard to gauge these things because you feel like, oh, it's rained a little bit, so it's not too dry. And granted, we have seen some improvements from where we were a year ago. But I'd also tell people, take a look at NOAA's drought monitor. It's a little dry, just a little dry. In the Dakotas, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa, Missouri, parts of Michigan, parts of Illinois, parts of Nebraska. You see where I'm going with this?
I do.
So hopefully we'll get some good moisture through the spring if indeed that forecast for a hot, dry summer plays out. But I'll say this from some of the weather forecasters we follow, they're already starting to cite their belief that we're going to see a lot of 100-degree days this summer. So I guess get ready for a scorcher, maybe, and keep your fingers crossed and your eyes open on the futures market for opportunity, because it's really easy to get apathetic when markets are weak, and they've been weak for, you know, an extended period of time now. So.
All right. Thank you, Nicole. We're going to go ahead and wrap this one up. But before we do, Nicole, do you have any final words for us?
Well, I would love for anyone who is a customer or is not to give me a shout. And when I'm at NIOP in a couple of weeks here, I'll be there with Marilyn from our team, who also follows the soy complex. And we'd be happy to chat with you, take a look at what you're dealing with in your world and ways in which we might be able to help you out down the road.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah. So if you spot her, go ahead and reach out if you're interested in talking to us a little bit more about oils. And you know what, Nicole, I'll be at the Natural Products Expo next week. In Anaheim. So always good. So look forward to our podcast recapping what the trends are down there. And then the week after, Kevin and I are at the Western Candy Conference. So it's that time of year, the busy time of year.
We'll put money in the airliners' pockets.
That's exactly right. All right, we're going to wrap this one up. As I always like to say, live with an attitude of gratitude. Enjoy every minute, moment with your friends and family. Don't take it for granted. Do something fun this weekend. Take care, everybody.
See ya.
That concludes this podcast episode. For expanded commentary and more detailed information, log on to McKinney Favel's IQ Ingredient Intelligence platform and listen to our Market Insights podcast. If you're not a subscriber, visit McKinney-Favel.com for more information. And as always, follow us on YouTube, LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter.